This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, and then their tool will provide options from other companies, so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Jeremy Stahl thought he knew exactly what his schedule was going to look like this week. Jeremy covers courts and the law for Slate. He lives in L.A., but he'd planned to be in New York. He was going to sit in the courtroom as the first of Donald Trump's four criminal cases finally moved forward. This is the hush money case involving porn star Stormy Daniels.
The trial date was expected to be and scheduled to be Monday, March 25th.
You were going to move out here.
I was going to move out here for, a good period of time, a month and a half of life. And that was the plan.
Until a little over a week ago.
All right, we begin here with our big story. Prosecutors now seeking a 30-day delay in the New York criminal hush money case against Donald Trump.
The Manhattan That's when, suddenly, the judge in this case agreed to put the trial on a 30-day hold.
Is any delay that he can get a win for Team Trump?
Well, I think it is. And you have to remember,
when this New York trial was pushed back, were you surprised? Did you react?
Yes. I certainly had like an emotional reaction of, oh, what the heck? What is going on? How is this happening again? Because it was totally unforeseen. This was the one case where everything had gone super duper smoothly up until that point.
Donald Trump is, of course, facing four criminal prosecutions, and now three of them are in some kind of holding pattern.
Former President Trump has so far successfully delayed his January 6th criminal trial, with his lawyers arguing he has presidential immunity.
I would say the betting odds are that there may be no conclusion to any of these cases.
And while the judge in Trump's hush money trial confirmed this week that trial would move forward, it is still starting a month late. Since January 6th, Jeremy's had an internal timer going in his mind. He knew Trump was likely to run for office again. He knew a campaign would mess with any kind of legal process. He knew that as a result, any push for accountability would need to move fast.
And honestly, when I spoke to the former prosecutors, the people who had investigated Trump's impeachment, people involved in this sort of thing said repeatedly over and over again, you know, if it were any other defendant, he would have been charged by now.
Do the delays here say more about Donald Trump or the U.S. legal system?
It's both, right? Because the U.S. legal system involves rights for defendants that we want defendants to have. And those are good things, I would say, generally speaking. But the other half of this is the Trump half.
Today on the show, is justice delayed, justice denied when it comes to Donald Trump? I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. I wanted Jeremy to give me a little refresher on the details of each of Trump's criminal cases. So he started with that hush money trial, the one that was supposed to have moved forward this week.
So this is the case stemming from the 2016 election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump that Donald Trump won. And if you recall, Trump had in place, according to prosecutors, an agreement with his attorney, Michael Cohen, and with the organization that ran the National Enquirer to cover up potentially incriminating stories about him, potentially bad stories about him. And he also was making side deals with, according to prosecutors, with people who might produce such stories. And Stormy Daniels is a former adult film performer who had one such story, who claimed to have had an affair with Donald Trump many, many years ago. And the allegation is that, you know, he, through Michael Cohen, paid her off not to tell the story, not to influence the election.
And the election is the key part, because it's not against the law to pay someone hush money, but it is against the law to misuse campaign funds.
That's exactly right. And that's what made this case so complicated, was what's actually illegal in New York is to cook your books, right? You can't claim that something is a business expense, which is what they did, or a legal retainer in this case for lawyer fees or whatever, which is what they did, sign a check to that effect, file it with the government when it's actually a hush money payment. You can't do that. But you're correct that what you also can't do is you can't move money around to affect a campaign in a way that is kept from the public and is hidden and is actually described as something else. So those factors combined turn this from a misdemeanor into a felony, according to the prosecutors. And according to the judges that have looked at this, that legal theory holds.
So I understand the allegations. Explain to me how this got delayed. Because as you said, this case was scheduled for a long time and not moving for a long time.
Yes, this was an unfortunate and unexpected and completely shocking delay, I would say. This happened when the district attorney's office sent this letter saying that they would agree to a 30-day pause in this trial because the Southern District of New York, which had initially investigated all of this and charged Michael Cohen, they hadn't turned over evidence from their investigation.
So federal prosecutors hadn't turned over evidence to state prosecutors or the defendant in this case?
That's correct. The federal prosecutors, the Southern District of New York, hadn't turned over evidence to the District Attorney of New York, Alvin Bragg, and they hadn't turned it over to Donald Trump's legal team. And Donald Trump says this is, you know, a great miscarriage of justice. He needs many, many, many days to go forward. And Alvin Bragg says, you know what? I don't think that these documents are going to be so important, but he has plenty of time to review them. We can still go ahead in the spring. We can still go ahead very soon.
Okay. Next up, the federal cases against Trump. Let's start with the January 6th case. Special Prosecutor Jack Smith is in charge of that one. The trial was supposed to start on March 4th. Obviously, that did not happen. Instead, this case is all tied up at the Supreme Court. Can you explain why?
What happened was that Trump basically filed an appeal that the case should never have been brought and doesn't belong in court, and that because of special circumstances, and specifically because he claims to have absolute presidential immunity from criminal prosecution on all actions that he might have done as part of his office, which are, he says, everything he did around January 6th and trying to overturn the 2020 election.
Yeah, the special circumstances are that he was president.
Yeah, the special circumstances are he used to be president and therefore a get out of jail free immunity forever card thing.
I can tell how you feel about this argument and how valid it is.
Well, I listened to the DC Circuit arguments about it, and the judges, all three judges, were just as skeptical and just as dumbfounded as I am sounding now, because it's literally such an extraordinary and an extraordinarily broad description of the powers of the president. The judges literally asked Trump's attorney, could the president order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? And because that's part of a presidential power, he can't be prosecuted for that. They wouldn't answer the question. But the answer was yes. According to Trump's legal argument, yes, the president can do whatever he wants, anytime he wants, and it's not criminal.
So the appeals court says this is bunk. And then it goes to the Supreme Court.
Trump goes to the Supreme Court. This is after Jack Smith had asked the Supreme Court to take this up on an expedited basis and to rush it before the appeals court ruled. The Supreme Court rejected that request. And then they sat on this request by Trump to put the case on hold for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then they said, you know what? We will hear this case and we'll hear it as our last case of the term.
So basically stopping the clock on this case.
They stopped the clock. They allowed Trump to stop the clock. And they stopped the clock at least until the end of June, because there's almost no way that this opinion is coming out before the end of June.
This is not the only case Jack Smith is prosecuting. There's also the classified documents case, which is being heard in Florida instead of D.C., where the January 6th case is being heard. How's that difference in venue impacting how quickly that case moves?
So that's the case where they did this search of the Mar-a-Lago property and found all these classified documents that shouldn't have been there and found all this evidence that Trump was keeping it from federal officials. The question in this case initially was, where would we bring this case? Because the alleged crime could be said to have been committed in D.C. or Florida. Now, the prosecutors in this case knew that if they charged the crime in D.C., that Trump would have, in a bid for delay, fought to have the case moved to Florida. They said, you know what? We don't even want to put up with that. We're going to charge the crime in Florida to begin with. And wouldn't you know it, luck of the draw, they ended up with Judge Eileen Cannon, who was one of Trump's final appointees when he was leaving office in 2020 and 2021.
Just in the last few weeks, this judge has made rulings that at least one attorney in Newsweek called legally insane.
What she did was she asked, the trial is not supposed to go forward until this summer at the earliest. It's on the docket for May, but the prosecutors have said we can do July. And Trump has said, no, do it after November, but August at the earliest. So it's not happening anytime soon. She hasn't dealt with many, many, many pretrial motions and evidentiary matters, all these things that need to happen before a trial can even start to move forward, she hasn't dealt with yet. And she put out this request from both sides to say, I want jury instructions now. So the very last things, one of the very last things you're supposed to do before all this other stuff has been done, she said she wanted jury instructions.
So how much of the delay is about the judge in the Florida case?
That's a good question. It's a very complicated case. It could conceivably have been delayed, right? Even without this judge, a certain amount. And it could have conceivably been pushed out because of all these issues. But this judge is doing things that are slowing it down that much more that also just don't make a lick of sense. And it's put that case basically on ice.
Okay. One more case to talk about, the criminal case against Trump in Georgia. And the last time we talked about this case on our show, Trump's lawyers were alleging that the prosecutor here, Fannie Willis, was having a relationship with one of the outside lawyers who was assisting her. What has happened in the weeks since those allegations came out?
So what the judge said was that this was not a conflict of interest. It was a very high bar to meet to claim that this was a conflict of interest, that Fannie Willis had basically hired Nathan Wade in order to advance her own financial interests in a way that prejudiced the defendants and was the reason for prosecuting these guys and trying to win a conviction against these guys. It was not an appropriate legal standard. And the judge, Scott McAfee, very wisely ruled, no, this is not a conflict of interest. He also ruled, though, that this was improper.
Yeah, he said one had to go, right? Like, you can't have both Fannie Willis and the former love interest.
That's exactly right. He said, because this has an air of impropriety that remains, Nathan Wade, you got to go. The special prosecutor, if Fannie Willis is going to continue to prosecute this case, Nathan Wade has to be off of it. And he resigned that day. And the case moves forward.
I'm thinking about all these cases and the prosecutors here. Feels like they're like kittens tied up in a ball of yarn. Is that fair of me?
Oh, God, that's a beautiful and horrible image. I see the kittens now with the faces. I see Fonny's face, and I see Jack Smith's face, and I see Alvin Bragg's face, and I see them just getting more and more trapped. It's how the system is built, but it's also how Trump has used the system to his advantage for decades. He has been in litigation like this for a very, very long time, never as a criminal defendant, but in other cases. And he knows what levers to pull and what string to wrap around which prosecutor. They are slowly making their ways out, and they're doing everything right in terms of moving these cases forward as quickly as possible, but there's always going to be one more hiccup.
We'll be back after a quick break.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
You've mentioned how delaying trials, it's a tactic that Trump has used frequently, like in the past. Do you have any insight into how he's done this over the years? Like, is there a case from the past where you'd look and be like, see, this is exactly what's happening here again?
I think of the Trump University case from 2016.
This was brought by the New York AG too, right?
Yes. And if you remember, it was this accusation that this quote unquote Trump University had defrauded students of tens of thousands of dollars, students, quote unquote, and presented themselves as a real credentialed institution and all these things. And the pace of it ultimately made it so that by the time it was eventually resolved, Trump was already president-elect, and he could resolve it in a manner incredibly beneficial to him. There was an agreement for a settlement that are terms that I don't think he probably would have gotten had he not won office. So it's a question of him using his political position and his political power and his political efforts in tandem with his legal efforts to kind of circumvent the other. So to use his political status to protect himself in the legal system. And he has done it again and again and again. And one could argue, and I have argued, that this entire presidential campaign is largely about doing that, about evading criminal and legal accountability for all of these actions, all of these alleged crimes. And there are many, many, many.
It is worth mentioning, I think, that Trump has faced two civil judgments, and they're substantial. The civil fraud penalty from the Attorney General of New York is more than $450 million. He was ordered to pay E. Jean Carroll nearly $90 million in defamation and damages. Why does it seem like those cases moved faster? And do you think in some ways losing money, if that's what ends up happening here, could be just as damaging as any kind of criminal finding?
I think a criminal finding is much more serious than the financial penalties.
Why do you say that?
Because it's a judgment of a jury of Trump's peers that he is a criminal and belongs either behind bars or in home confinement or somewhere where he can no longer continue to commit crimes, versus it's a judgment that he has committed financial crimes and deserves to lose money, right? So those are two very different judgments, I think, in the eyes of both the jurors and likely in the eyes of voters, and also consequence-wise.
How likely do you think it is that any of these criminal trials we've talked about reach their conclusion before the November election?
So I think New York will.
Could that involve jail time?
So what he's been charged for are these dozens of felony counts. And as the DA has pointed out in previous filings, other people who have been charged and convicted of this crime have received those penalties, right? It's hard to imagine that they're going to lock up the Republican nominee for president in the midst of an election season. But I don't know what Judge Juan Merchan is going to rule. And I don't know what tactics Trump will use to try to evade that punishment.
So you think the Alvin Bragg case will be resolved before November? What about the others? The classified documents case, the January 6th case, the case in Georgia?
I don't see any of them getting resolved before November. There is a possibility that one of the three, and it's hard to say which one at this point, but there is a possibility that one of the three goes to trial, you know, right towards the end of the election season when voters are going to the polls.
Yeah. I think when these criminal charges started to pile up, there was a sense among some Democrats that the courts could save them, for lack of a better term. The idea that, you know, maybe these criminal cases will come forward, Trump won't even be able to run, he'll be in jail. Is it officially time to let that idea go?
I think the evidence is that that should have been let go after a failed criminal investigation of what appeared very much to be obstruction of justice during the James Comey firing episode and the Russia investigation. Then a failed impeachment effort in the Ukraine blackmail extortion case. And then a failed conviction impeachment effort after January 6th. I think that the reliance of political people on the justice system to solve this problem has always been wishful thinking, but it doesn't mean that the justice system doesn't play a role. And it doesn't mean that legal accountability for Donald Trump doesn't matter both for our rule of law and for the broader system of our democracy. I think it does. I think it matters. I think it's necessary. I think that's why it should have been done a very, very long time ago. But yeah, that these courts are not going to save Democrats in 2024, and they're not going to save our democracy.
Jeremy Stahl, I'm super grateful to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Mary.
Jeremy Stahl is Slate's jurisprudence editor. Slate Plus subscribers can hear more of him over on our legal podcast, Amicus. And that's our show. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Madeline Ducharme, and Anna Phillips. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.